Welcome to the post Super Bowl edition of the Papa Joe podcast. I am Joe. Sitting next to me on my left is Pop.
Good day, franchise.
And on my right is co-host of Sports from the Six podcast, Dwayne Turner. Dwayne?
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
No problem. Like, you know, we got to plug everything that goes on around here, so we definitely had to have you on. And he's got a great opinion. Because he's like me, he's my age, not like Pops.
Excuse me. So does that have to be preceded by hashtag ampersand, at, hashtag, you are cool, what?
That's what his tweets look like, by the way, guys. He doesn't really know how to use that yet.
Chirp, chirp.
So we would like to give you something that no one else has in the world. We have, just for you, only from Pop and Joe, what Richard Sherman was thinking when he watched that interception.
Oh my God. No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
I don't blame him for thinking that.
Oh, that was Sherman? I actually thought it was you saying after you realized that you owe me a coffee from last week's bet.
It's true. I do owe you a coffee. I do owe you coffee, but I will find a double or nothing before I have to pay up because apparently I've set a very high bar. So, when you guys were watching that, did you have the Michael Scott, no, God, no moment? Or were you just like, thank God, I did not want to see the Seahawks win?
I was more shocked than anything. I mean, for a pass call to be called at that time, I was just shocked. I stood up. I was just honestly just in total shock that they decided they weren't going to run the ball, especially after the fact that we saw Marshawn Lynch carry the ball to that spot the very play before. So just shock from me.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's where I think that's where my biggest issue was with the play, that you definitely had the chance to run the ball. And the fact that they chose against that was ridiculous. And I know from a guy who's not in the NFL, and I understand I'm not a coach and I've never played professional football, nor have I played amateur football, but I think I've played enough Madden, and I think I've and I think I've watched enough football.
That counts.
Yeah, right? 100% that counts. You know how many guys are serious about Madden? But I mean, I think I've seen enough football to realize you have a timeout and you have beast mode. Give him the ball and let him run straight through whatever they put in front of him and see if he gets in. If he doesn't get in, that's okay. You take your time out, you move on, and then you try and extend the play if you don't have a throw on the third down.
I, you know, would have to agree with that, but we're under a few assumptions over here before we move anything further. I mean, we're assuming that Seattle made that play or called that play. And here's where I look at the situation. Last week, I had called New England was going to win. I said it was going to be a close game. And my deciding factor was that if it was close, Belichick would find a way to cheat. And so if you look at the sideline, what was going on at that time was Belichick and Brady were talking to one another. And Brady says, oh, man, we're going to lose again to another one of those wild catches. That's, you know, that's how they got down to that field at that time. And Belichick said, no. What's going to happen, basically, is that I've hacked into their headset. I'm going to tell a quarterback to pass the ball. And Brady goes, no, they're not going to believe that. Who's going to believe you throwing the ball? No, they'll believe it. They'll believe it. So while everybody else was trying to figure out what Seattle was doing, Belichick whispered into his headset that was connected to Seattle's quarterback and said, run a passing play. How else can you explain the perfect pickoff? I mean, this is an undrafted person here. A nobody, really? All of a sudden, going in there and making an interception, reading the play better than as if he knew it was coming. Well, how else could he know it was coming? It's because Belichick called that play.
Belichick called the play.
That's what I'm sticking with here.
We're past squishy ball, and now we're into switching boxes in the mics. But I, you know what? It was fascinating, I feel, to see the biggest play in the game happening with New England secondary. on the field. Like, if you thought any secondary was going to steal the show, you definitely thought it was Sherman and company.
The Legion of Boom.
Right, Legion of Boom. And they got blasted out of that place when you had a rookie, like, a rookie corner just jumping in on that pick. And me and Dwayne were looking at it a couple days ago, and we realized he just bodied off it wasn't Baldwin.
It was Lockett.
Ricardo Lockett.
Yeah, Lockett. He bodied Lockett right off of that ball and jumped in to grab it. And that's what I think was great, because it's very, very tough for a rookie to make that move. Because if you miss, like we saw in Green Bay when Clinton Dix missed that jump.
No. Oh.
Right? Like once you miss that, it's game over. You're gonna give him the chance to get into the end zone, which was fascinating. I'm surprised he really took that jump.
One thing that impressed me about the play, and again, you can look at, like I said, the physicality of it, but the mindset that's going on. You're looking at a situation here where you're up 4 points, the other team is at your 1 yard line or half yard line, wherever they were. You got less than a minute. You have to start having some doubts that the other team is going to score. Like that all has to be running through your head. You know, there's a potential of losing it. And you have somebody that's in the outskirts going, more than likely, I'm not involved in the last play of this game and I'm going to lose a Super Bowl. I mean, there's got to be 100 things going into a person's head at this time. And yet, he's professional enough to remain focused, read the play, and, you know, how else can you say this? But he wanted the ball more.
Right.
Yeah.
And wound up winning them the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was an incredible play by Butler. I mean, to just come in pretty much, I mean, to come into that kind of a situation, like you just said, Pop, and to pull off a play like that. I mean, he read the play perfectly. He jumped the route and was able to pick off the ball, which, again, should never have been thrown in the first place. But, yeah, you got to give him credit. I mean, coming back to your theory, Pop, about Belichick and his
cheating ways.
Exactly. To be honest, I think what they were intending to do is I think they wanted to have the Seahawks score, because when you look at it, what happens is if the Seahawks end up scoring, they would be up by 3. So you figure with the amount of time that was left, I believe they had 2 timeouts left, the Patriots. Think about it. At the end of the first half, the Seahawks were able to march down the field and get a touchdown in, I believe, less than 30 seconds. So you figure Brady should be able to do the same, at least for a field goal. So I think they were trying to have them score.
You know what? I have to disagree with you, because I look at it this way. Let's say Seattle catches the ball and they score a touchdown. You know, we're not calling it the worst play in Super Bowl history.
Right.
You know, we're not. We're calling it gutsy. A gutsy play.
Right.
So I'm not sure in terms of how bad that play call was. Granted, everybody who's anybody, when you ask them what they do, everybody
runs
to a T says running the ball.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure even on the Ask Madden button on PS4, he would say run the damn ball.
But. Exactly. But you look at the situation there, and Seattle's coach.
Pete Carroll.
Thank you. My memory goes in my old age.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping you forget about the coffee.
No. Coffee's my livelihood, man.
That's true.
He said in his recognition, it makes sense to me, you know, it wasn't the worst call. It was the absolute worst result. And he's right with that. But let's say they catch the ball. Let's say they run it in. I think the worst call of the game becomes Belichick not calling a timeout. And that's why I'm disagreeing with you, Dwayne, is because you had a minute. And it went down to, what, 30 seconds before they ran that passing play?
I believe so.
And I'm thinking to myself, like, why isn't New England calling a timeout? Call a timeout. Call a timeout. Call a timeout. And here I am yelling at Belichick to call a timeout, because I thought he would have made the worst call at the game. So listening to other experts on the situation after, they're saying that Belichick felt he had the right defense on there. He didn't want to take Seattle away from doing what they were doing. And I think when we look into it, what he boiled down to is he let Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks outthink themselves.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, another thing that I was looking at, too, when you talk about crucial timeouts or timeouts taken and not taken, New England takes a timeout the first time the Seattle offense runs onto the field. So right after the Marshawn Lynch run, you see Seattle come onto the field, and New England takes a timeout. And it was clear that he saw something in that offense that he was not happy with having his defense out there. Then he marched his defense back out there in the right formation, clearly. But I think the key was that Bill Belichick knew what Bill Belichick was going to do. But I don't think Pete Carroll knew what Pete Carroll was ready to do compared to what Bill Belichick was going to throw at him. And I think that's one of the intimidation factors when you're playing a guy like Bill Belichick, or when you're playing an offense like Tom Brady's, or anytime you're playing somebody that's of like that legendary ilk, you start second guessing yourself. Because there was a lot of people talking about even the stats. They were saying that on a goal line stand, there's never been an interception this year off a throw. Yeah, nothing this whole season. And that Marshawn Lynch is, I think he was like 30 or 40% this year, or 30% from the 1 yard line trying to punch it in. I think he's 1 for 5, sorry, this year, and 40% his career.
Okay.
So, I mean, the stats are on Pete Carroll's side. However, you kind of throw that out of the window when you're looking across the field and you see, you know, the ripped up hoodie. Right? You double think that. And I think Pete Carroll was trying to pull a Bill Belichick on Bill Belichick and trying to surprise the opposition. And I don't think it succeeded. And I think what has gotten Pete Carroll to where he's been has been the philosophy of pound, whether it be on offense or defense. Both sides pound at the ball. Both sides pound at their opposition when they're on there. And I think that's where he should have looked back at Marshawn Lynch and just said, go get this Super Bowl. Like, just if it's Will Fork, just drop him and get through there. And I think that's where his mistake went. But I think the key contributor is just watching, you know, the hoodie on the other end of the field.
Well, and again, I'm not sure if it's been clarified whether Pete made the call or whether he approved the call or whether the call came from the offensive coordinator. I'm pretty sure we've ruled out Russell Wilson.
Audible.
I'm pretty sure that it wasn't an audible. No. Didn't look like anything of that nature.
No,
I don't think so. So, you know, who did make the call? And obviously, Pete Carroll's going to take the blame for it. That's what a head coach does. I look at it, yeah. You know, was there a bit of nerves there? And, you know, it's easy for us on a Monday morning to go back and say what should have been, what could have been. But you have to go back to the adage, right? You know, Lynch is the girl that, you know, took you to the dance, and, you know, that's who you got to dance with.
But, like, do you guys believe that in a situation like a Super Bowl, where it's every decision is the biggest decision essentially of your career as the head coach, don't you think that that decision goes through him? I mean, his offensive coordinator can never be in the Hall of Fame, but if he wins 2 back-to-back Super Bowls, has one of the best defenses of all time because of it, shouldn't that question go through Pete Carroll? Like, don't you think that's the reason why essentially it's always on Pete Carroll regardless of who made the first call?
Well, hold on. The onus is always there. Right. The onus is always going to be on Pete Carroll, regardless of who made it. But as a leader, you're going to take your, I don't want to say subordinates, but you're going to take the people that you've put in position. I mean, why'd you pick them as your offensive coordinator, defense? You're going to take their input. I mean, they're there for a reason because you trust it. And they're there to do a job as well as you are. The responsibility is always going to be yours, that's for sure. But you're going to take what they say into consideration.
And you guys bring up the decision. One aspect of it that I try to think about, because it's funny, because Pete Carroll, throughout the year, he's not been that aggressive of a coach in terms of play calling. I mean, you would think otherwise. You see this guy marching up and down the field, chewing his gum. But he's been a relatively, I don't want to say soft play caller, but he trusts his defense so much that if there are, say, 4th-and-2s or 4th-and-3s in certain locations of the field, he'll make sure he'll punt it because he trusts that the defense will be able to get him back the ball. And specific to that play, for him to call such an aggressive play call like that, you know, I believe it was a pick play, obviously, that was supposed to go to Ricardo Lockett on the half-yard line. For him to call that play, again, instead of the Marshawn Lynch run, it was shocking. So did Bill Belichick and the whole, you know, giving back the ball to Tom Brady with too much time factor into his call or into that call? I don't know, but obviously there was something going through his head that he decided that he had to, at that time, make that call. And there have been instances where, you know, he brought up, I believe earlier in the year, there was a match against the Denver Broncos where they marched down the field with about 50 seconds and were able to get a touchdown and a two-point conversion because they had left a certain amount of time on the clock. So that, again, things like that probably factored into his mind. So, yeah, I guess we just have to all take that in, just like he is right now.
I was about to say, I mean, looking, we've been discussing this for, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 minutes right now. Let's give Pete a break. He had, what, 30 seconds, 45 seconds to make that decision? You know, because like you said, you know, you factor in all the stats, which, I'm, you know, that's his job to know. Again, I'll have to go to what he says. You know, was it the worst call? I don't think it's as bad as everybody's making out to it. But damn, was it a bad result. And that's what he's going to have to live with.
So let me ask you guys this, because knowing how terrible a result it was from that play call, does that factor into the fact that maybe you don't call a play that can cause such a dramatic result like that? Because you know the possibility that of that happening is.
I'll answer that question with a question. What happens if you hand in to Marshawn Lynch and he fumbles?
Then you made the right choice. Ultimately, when you look at it, and Marshawn Lynch fumbles because the best player on your team failed. But when the best player on your team threw a fairly well-thrown ball, although some complained that, you know, it was a little bit leading. It was a ball that was leading
too far.
Little bit too far, pushing him into the end zone. I mean, yes and no, because there's a lot of times where, you know, a toss will be thrown to a guy like Gronk from Brady, and you know there's no chance of him catching, and he catches it. And then they go, oh, you see, Tom Brady knew that was the throw he wanted because Gronk's going to go out and get it. Now, I think when you lose because the player on the field failed, you can't sit there and say that was the reason. You can't sit there, and blame the coach, because the coach gave it to the best player. It was the same argument that a lot of people had, not to, you know, pull a Canadian card here and go back to hockey, but when Wayne Gretzky didn't take that. Wayne Gretzky, I don't know, that guy, he's done some good things. When he didn't shoot for Canada in Nagano, everybody said, why? And Mark Crawford said, well, because he had a bad record against Dominic Hasek. Well, he had a fantastic record in the NHL. He was the best NHL player of all time, arguably.
Right.
If you lose because Wayne Gretzky or Sidney Crosby or Michael Jordan or LeBron James misses, that's not your fault. That's the right play.
And sorry, yeah, and I'll take it even further. I mean, that was second down. So if Marshawn Lynch gets the ball on second down, third down, and fourth down and gets stuffed, then 100% I'm congratulating the Patriots for a great win.
Because for sure.
You pull that off, you deserve to win. There's no question in my mind.
So I think that answers your question, basically, in that, you know, you don't want to lose in that manner. And like you said, you go out with your guns, and that should have been the play. And, if they get stopped, I think maybe they have time for one more run. I don't think they have time to run it all four times.
Right, with the one timeout.
With the one timeout. Maybe you throw it on third down and maybe we're talking it again. But, if he gets stopped in the second down and they throw a third down to stop the time, or even that's more livable than what happened here.
Ultimately, right. Like most coaches are going to be defined by their biggest play, their biggest gamble. And that's how, I mean, sports is ultimately a gamble. But when you think of gambles that paid off, like, for example, Sean Payton and the New Orleans Saints kicking that onside kick in the second half.
Right.
Fantastic move. However, that's catching somebody off guard. That makes sense. The thing was, I think, like we were saying before, I feel like Pete Carroll was trying to catch Bill Belichick off guard. And Bill Belichick has proven you don't catch Bill Belichick off guard because he's watching you or deflating you, or in Pop's grand terms, stealing your commands. So,
inserting his. But and you're right. You don't try and catch somebody off guard 30 seconds left in a Super Bowl.
No.
You just don't?
No.
Yeah. So yeah, it was the wrong play. Period. End of story.
So when you look at this, I mean, there's so many storylines to go to, but do you think the evil man in the hoodie to everybody outside of, you know, New Boston England will be seen as the best coach of all time? Could he potentially be the best coach of all time? Have we watched our, you know,
Chuck Noll,
Vince Lombardi?
There is no doubt in my mind. You have to look at everything, and it's one of the things that saddens me about the Super Bowl is that should have been what we've been talking about for the days and weeks after Super Bowl. That's what should have been the conversation. Mm-hmm. Is Belichick the best or close to the best? Is Brady the best or close to the best? But we're not talking about that, and that to me is a shame. Well, you know, Brady didn't win it at the end. Yeah, you know what? He scored 4 touchdowns against Seattle defense. I'm sorry. He did. You know, Belichick, with or without that call at the end there, he had a masterful game against Seattle in terms of being able to manage it. It's been, what, how many years since they've been to the Super Bowl? Last time was 2007
or 8. 7
or 8?
Yeah.
And it's been 6 times he's been at Super Bowl, 1-4. Nobody else has done that.
Right, and I was speaking to one of our journalist companions, Mitch Sanderson. He was saying to me that I got to get Mitch Sanderson. I have to give him credit. Because we were talking. He's like, I told you that. And I'm like, did you? He's like, I did. I'm like, okay, well, I'll give you credit so that nobody yells at me.
Oh, I see. You give him credit, but you don't give me a coffee.
No.
Thank you very
Some things
much.
Are more valuable, Pop. Our relationship's still iffy. He was saying, and I fully agree, when you look at most great coaches in NFL history or in almost any sport's history, they have a constant credo, a constant system. You have Bill Walsh with his West Coast offense, right? You have Chuck Noll with the hardcore steel curtain. You have, you know, Scotty Bowman who practices the, you know, forecheck everywhere you are and own the puck. Bill Belichick's only theory and only philosophy is I will beat you how I'm supposed to beat you. And that's something that I've rarely seen in many coaches, that he has a different battle plan regardless of who he's playing. And we saw it very clearly this playoffs when you had him run for 12, make his running backs essentially only run for about 15 yards in one game to the next game, running for 130 with 4 touchdowns or 3 touchdowns. I mean, his defense and his offense is set to go against whatever you choose to play against it. And for that reason, I definitely agree that Bill Belichick is something we will never see again and will constantly be emulated, as I maybe think we saw in Pete Carroll, but I don't think you'll ever get to the original. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, that's a great argument. I mean, just to come off of what you just said, on defense, Bill Belichick, the one thing that he'll always aim to do is to take away that one player that always will try to will always beat the opposing team. We've seen it in games where they play the Colts, where they try to take away T.Y. Hilton. And then flip it back on offense, like you were mentioning earlier. I mean, for him to decide he's not going to run the ball in the second half against the Baltimore Ravens in that first game, to then deciding we're going to let LeGarrette Blount pretty much repeat what he's been doing against the Colts for the past few years in the next game. I mean, it really is incredible. Now, in terms of whether or not he's the best coach of all time, he's definitely on that list. I really wish I had seen somebody like Shula, because, I mean, he had such a long, long tenure in the NFL as a head coach and some of the things he accomplished. And he was one of those guys who made a few changes from what I remember and from what I remember researching, that he adjusted, you know, his game to fit, like, say, a Dan Marino coming in and things like that. So, yeah, I say the book is still open, but I don't blame anybody who thinks that Belichick right now is the best coach of all time.
I think very, very quickly here is you look at there's different ways in terms of coaching. For you youngins, you know, what do any of you know about Vince Lombardi? And I'll tell you what you know about Vince Lombardi. All you know is some of the quotes that he said. Nobody can motivate like Lombardi could. And he brought players up because of how he could motivate them. Belichick is nowhere in his league. To me, it doesn't look like somebody motivates it. But this is what Belichick has got going for him. One, he picks the players that well work under a system.
Right.
He pressurizes people. He puts them in pressure-filled situations and expects people to perform. And secondly, to follow up when you said, Joe, every coach nowadays' mantra is, I'm not worried about the other team. I'm concentrating on building my own team. It just doesn't seem that way with Belichick. Belichick examines the other team to a fault until he finds out what their problems are, what their chinks in their armor are, and then he drives his tank right through it. And he's done that consistently. Like you mentioned, the examples, switching his offense a complete 180 from one game to the next just to get the desired result, which is a victory. So, yeah, I would put him up there, and I would put him on the top of the hill right now.
Now, the one thing I feel like with our, I guess, our generation, Pop included, is...
Really? Right now I'm included?
Yeah, you're included, man. I think we get afraid of throwing out the best ever because I think history has really polished everybody else's careers. Not that I'm trying to negate that somebody else is the greatest of all time, but I feel like nowadays we're really afraid to come out and actually say, no, yeah, he's the greatest of all time. Just because he's happening now doesn't necessarily mean he isn't.
Of course.
Like, for example, you know, a rebuttal to your Vince Lombardi being able to motivate. When you have Bill Belichick taking a parade route that was printed in the Philadelphia newspaper, sticking it on the pin board, and saying, this is what they think, boys, walking out. Or, you know, and then, or taking a, I can't remember, third or fourth round pick in Tom Brady.
Ooh, oh boy. No, sixth rounder.
Giselle, sixth rounder. I still have a chance to be a first rounder. Taking a
no,
sixth.
You don't.
I know, I don't, but I'm good in Madden.
I still have faith in you, buddy.
Thanks, man. When you take a sixth rounder in Tom Brady and could potentially have created arguably the best quarterback of all time, because without him, I don't think Tom Brady becomes Tom Brady.
No, they're married. How
right.
Belichick
absolutely.
Is Brady and vice versa.
Right, and then right. look at what he's done with a lot of guys. I mean, Randy Moss coming off of, you know, pulling down his pants, going to Oakland, and like nobody gets past going to Oakland. You go to Oakland and you're gone. You end up in Florida when you're done with Oakland.
You go to Oakland to die, don't you?
Yeah, apparently. Okay. Apparently, no pun intended. But, you know, he takes a guy like Randy Moss, fits him in his system, and Moss becomes like the prototypical athlete that you want to have on your team. And I think it takes a very special person to be able to understand that not everybody needs a fire under their butt. Some guys need a kick in the butt. Some guys need a pat on the butt. And some guys just need to be cut. And that's where I think Belichick goes above and beyond. That past his fantastic abilities as a coach, there's something about him that's able to read people. And we don't really get a good look of it because, you know, we're on to Cincinnati. And that, you know, that's who we get. But I would love to know what he gives those guys in the room to make even his rookie corner look like he should have been a Pro Bowler for 2 seconds.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. I mean, what we see through the media of Bill Belichick is in pretty much complete contrast to what his players always say about him. They say he's a funny guy. He jokes around. You know, he loves his players. You know, he does whatever he can to get them in the right position at the right time. Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard to judge him. And, you know, at that point, figure out where he belongs on that hierarchy.
You mentioned a couple of words that's going to throw me off in a completely different tangent here. You said media and you said love. And right now, you see it, Joe. The blood pressure is rising in me right now.
He's officially tomato.
Yeah.
Like, that's his color right now.
It's time, Joe.
Yeah. Pop's cheesed.
It's time for Pop's rant.
Look at me when I'm talking, son. You can argue with me, but you can't argue with figures. Two half nothings is a whole nothing. And I know what I'm talking about because...
I heard that the beloved CRTC in this country for the 2017 Super Bowl are going to allow Canadian television to air American commercials. Now, I'm sure the two of you are familiar with Super Bowl commercials and how special they are, aren't you?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. So what's the big deal? And here's the big deal. They are 20 years too late. Because back when I was a youngin', and yes, there was a time when I was a youngin', we didn't see any American Super Bowl commercials.
No, that's because it was on the radio.
No. We didn't get a chance to see them or even hear about them. Have you seen the Super Bowl commercials this year?
Yeah, they're all on YouTube.
Yep.
Ding!
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden, CRTC, because they have the Canadian fans' interest at heart and they listen to Canadians complain, in 2 years they're going to allow these commercials to come through, which is going to hurt Canadian Broadcasting Company a great deal. Yep. So they've got 2 years to straighten themselves up here and say, you know what? Let the Canadian commercials go through. Let them collect the money that they can, because anybody, and I mean anybody, can see these commercials. Commercials! We're talking about freaking commercials here. Can see them on YouTube and at any, you know, through their mobile phone or the internet site and get them through. So CRTC, get with the program and just stop meddling. That's my rant.
And you can also catch those commercials before the game has even been played. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but all of those commercials are available on YouTube, all those platforms you mentioned, long before the game has even started. So,
I mean, the business behind it doesn't even make any sense, because one, because I totally agree. Apparently, only like 19 people complained about this. And I don't understand how that's what's going to have to, like, just, oh, my God, those 19 people are dying to see the WhatsApp of 2016 or 2017. Like, who cares? And then I think it was Bob McCown who brought up a great point that if you're doing that, for example, like Bell Media, who I believe owns the rights to the Super Bowl for Canada, then aren't they going to pay pennies on the dollar to air the Super Bowl? Because then those people are just going to switch to, you know, CBS or whichever American broadcast is going to have it. I have no reason to watch it on TSN, because TSN is going to no longer want to have those. So they're going to ask for people to pay more to get their commercials on. The Super Bowl is going to become unneeded for them.
And, you know, I get so upset, because 20 years ago, this would be something I'd be interested in. You know, pre-internet days, you know, we would talk about these commercials. You know, I heard that this was going to happen. I heard his hair caught on fire. You know, you hear about all these things that go on, and the hype that gets built up. And I'll say it again. For commercials.
Right.
But there was hype, and you wanted to know about it. And we didn't have any opportunity to see it until 6-7 months down the road when they finally would air them. And you know what? Back then, I probably would have pushed for it. And now I feel bad because of what it may have done to the Canadian industry. You know, I'm a little wiser now. Not a lot, but I'm a little wiser, by the way. Bud Wiser. Never mind. Talking about Super Bowl commercials. I am a little wiser now, and I do have a bit better understanding of economics. And so, you know, your timing again kills me. Why? Why, CRTC? Why?
Yeah, and speaking of wisers, after a couple of wisers and Cokes in the first quarter, I need to go pee. So I'm okay with seeing the same commercial for the next new sitcom that CTV's probably not going to end up having for longer than 3 months.
You know,
like, what? I'll miss that. I just got to go pee and get some more chips and wings. Like,
you know,
leave me
what?
Alone.
I didn't have that problem. You know why? Because I still don't have my coffee.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay. Well, we'll get him. We'll get you your coffee. All right. Well, on a fun note, Tom Brady has been giving away some of his belongings. He's actually given Malcolm Butler the MVP truck because he believes that, you know, he was essentially the MVP. So, lucky Malcolm Butler. But, I mean, everybody in New England must love that guy, because he is definitely their hero this year. Mm-hmm. That guy was just fantastic play. Fantastic play. Rookie guy just saving a Super Bowl for their New England Patriots.
No question.
You know what? He deserves it. And I'm really glad. I don't know. I didn't catch it all, but apparently Tom couldn't give him his truck, so he had to sort of like give it back to Ford, I think it was, and Ford had to get them to save a whole bunch of taxes and stuff like that.
But
I'm saying is that they even went through all that trouble to make it nice and easy for one Mr. Butler.
Taxes are important, ask Phil Mickelson.
Or don't.
He'll get mad. Well, that's been our Super Bowl wrap-up show. Thank you, Pop. Thank you, Dwayne.
Thank you, Frances.
And just remember, New England, every time you think of Malcolm Butler, just remember, he can be your hero.
Be good, boys.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Anytime. I can be